This week on Writers, Inc.
What I'm seeing a lot of lately, especially with authors, is the very vulnerable posts. So it's like, here's my journey of being an author. It's never been a great one. There's been ups and downs, but of course, social media, we see everyone's highlight reels. We don't see the nitty gritty. We don't see the details. We don't see the struggle of getting to publish a book.
J.K. Rowling was nearly homeless when she wrote the first Harry Potter book. Stephen King penned Carrie in a small desk wedged between a washer and dryer. James Patterson worked in advertising and famously crafted the Toys R Us theme song long before becoming an author. Join New York Times bestseller J.D. Barker and a panel of industry powerhouses as they pull back the curtain on some of the world's most prolific authors. Where did they start? What is their process? The biggest names in publishing all have origin stories. All have tips and secrets. What does it take to consistently top the bestseller lists and become a household name? Get your notepad out. School's in session. This is Writers, Inc.
Hi, I'm Christine Daigle.
I'm Jenna Brown.
I'm Kevin Tomlinson.
And I'm J.D. Barker. Welcome to Writers, Inc. So I'm hoping I'll be able to stick out for the whole podcast. We are at an Airbnb that we rented up in the mountains in New Hampshire. But my internet signal is like 1.5 megs, and it's
Yay.
Like that's on the high end. So if I fade out, that's what's going on. And my voice sounds terrible because we're all outside doing winter skiing type stuff. And so anyway, that's what's happening with us. Global warming has not hit this year. I think it the message did not get out, but like we started getting snow about 3-4 weeks ago already.
Wow.
And like where we are now, like they've got a ton of it. And like even back home, like I'm looking at the security camera stuff, and like we've got snow sticking on the ground, and that never happens this time of year.
Same.
So it's shaping up to be a very, very white winter.
Yeah, I don't remember having a winter with this much snow this cold for a lot of years. Like the last few years, it's been mild and we've had no snow in December, but we're getting hit here too. So.
Oh, are you? Yeah. It's snowing here. I mean, that's not a big surprise, but it has been like a lot chillier, very cold.
Damn. Yeah. It's been in the 30s several days this past week. This morning it was in the 30s.
That right? sounds
and
balmy.
You're in Texas, right?
Yeah, Texas.
So Texas doesn't get to the 30s. Come on.
No, we don't. Well, the whole state shut down. We had a big, you know, statewide announcement about it. Everybody stay inside. Something's wrong with the weather.
Yeah.
Have you ever actually hit freezing, like frozen pipes and stuff like that? That's probably a big problem there.
Yeah, it is a big problem here. In fact, a few years ago, they had the whole polar vortex thing roll in, and it just shut the whole state down for like 3 or 4 days.
I remember that. Yeah.
It was a big deal. Yeah. So we had pipes freeze. We weren't in this house yet. So we were staying with my in-laws, and we had to fix a pipe real quick that – it burst.
Oh, wow.
So, yeah. Those are fun. Yeah. No electricity and it was, you know, below freezing.
Well, it's rough in those places where they're just not used to it. You know, mm-hmm. like you guys aren't equipped for any of that. And like, I'm guessing if you got a dusting of snow, the whole world would completely shut down too, because the nearest snowplow is probably 1,500 miles away.
Yeah,
that's how it is here. If the roads start icing up like at all, particularly at the airport, like if we get a little bit of snow, like everything shuts down. But yeah, it's like you said, people make fun of it because they go like, oh, they can't handle the snow. But it's like we literally have nothing, like we don't have the infrastructure for it. Like, so we.
Those are the same people who cry and whine when it gets above 100 degrees where they are. So I don't care what they have to say.
All right, Kevin, what is in the news?
Well, speaking of non-weather related news. Everybody in Hollywood secretly hates Netflix. I don't think it's that big of a secret, honestly. Netflix has proposed
not anymore.
$83 billion purchase of Warner Brothers Discovery has rattled Hollywood, where many already resent Netflix's impact on talent pay, theatrical leases in the traditional studio system. Guilds and theater groups warn the deal could further erode moviegoing and jobs. Within days, Paramount Skydance launched a hostile $108 billion counterbid, arguing Netflix's valuation of Warner's cable assets is unrealistic and pitching itself as a more traditional, theatrically minded studio, though its offer raises concerns about debt and political influence. Both bids face major antitrust scrutiny and industry backlash, with fears that consolidation will shrink competition, raise consumer costs, and concentrate enormous power in one entertainment giant. Analysts note Warner Brothers is stuck between Netflix's volume-first theater skeptical strategy and Paramount's quality focused but politically fraught proposal, leaving the future of Warner's movie slate, theatrical windows, and editorial independence uncertain.
There is a lot of moving parts going on here because Warner Brothers, if nothing changes, is in serious trouble, you know, like bankruptcy type trouble. I mean, they've got assets and things like that that they can liquidate. But, you know, on the flip side of that is the whole antitrust thing. And there's a lot of people saying that no matter who wants to buy them, if it's Netflix, whether it's Paramount, that that's not going to happen just because of the antitrust side. And everybody, like you just said, just started screaming when Netflix jumped in. Like on the Hollywood's, like they're worried that there's not going to be any movies anymore, like a theatrical release anyway. And Netflix is promising them that they will keep that model alive. But, you know, just like with any takeover, any kind of merger, like nobody buys that, you know, like that's just, it's all talk until you actually see it. And it just, it doesn't make sense for Netflix to keep that alive because it's completely contrary to their existing model. So I'd love to see Paramount be able to pull this off, but I've got a feeling the antitrust thing is going to get in the way of everybody.
Yeah. One of the articles said Netflix has convinced us it's better to stay at home to watch movies. And the movies go so fast in some instances from the theater to streaming. And, you know, I'm guilty of this. But then the thought of not having movie theaters and not having big screen movies makes me incredibly sad. So how do we revitalize movie going culture?
Well,
you know,
I haven't been to a movie theater in years because the movies haven't been worth paying movie theater prices for, and so I don't go. But I think one thing this will open up is an opportunity for smaller studios to start getting theatrical releases in a way that hasn't been possible in the past. And I've got some like insider tap on a couple of different businesses out there that are kind of aiming at this sort of thing. And so I do know that this is something that's kind of on the radar. So there are those who think that this could be a good thing if Netflix took Warner over and stopped doing theatrical releases, because it would open up the playing field.
I got to disagree, because it's that's a band-aid, because you got to look at the actual numbers. The theaters aren't going to be able to stay in business without major releases coming out of the studios. Indie films don't bring in enough money on the big screen to sustain the movie theater model. So they might be able to do that for a little while. That's similar to what we saw during COVID, where, you know, there were no movies coming out. So all of a sudden Dirty Dancing is showing everywhere. You know, got a couple bodies in the seats, but like that was not enough to sustain that, you know, just the square footage of the rental of that property. So I don't see that. But I mean, honestly, though, like you just said, you haven't been at the movies for a couple of years. Christine, when was the last time you were at the movies?
Oh, I saw One Battle After Another was the last one I saw. So that's not
okay,
that
so
long
recent.
Ago.
Yes. Yeah, recently. I was just, you know, we're on vacation right now, and like I needed to get away from vacation. So I went to the movies and I saw Now You See Me, and I was like one of three people in the theater. And this was, you know, midday. This was like a 2:30 in the afternoon showing, which I get. But, you know, like the whole experience turned me off. You know, like the floor was sticky. You know, the food cost, you know, more than the ticket. I think I spent like 50, 60 bucks or something just for me and my daughter to go. You know, so like, and, you know, you can't hit pause. There's people talking around you. There's people on their phones around you. And Christine, like you've seen the theater in my house. Like that's my option. And like, honestly, what I do these days, I've got an email that I still get from a movie theater in Pittsburgh that just has all their releases, everything playing on the screen. It comes every Thursday. I go through that. I look at the movies that I want to see. I've got a list that I keep. I just add those movies to that list. And then, you know, when they pop up on streaming somewhere, I watch them at home. And I, you know, I think we're all kind of in that same boat right now. So this is just, it's a seismic shift in the whole industry.
I do wonder though, I think like Stranger Things, actually did a really smart, like I actually think it was quite brilliant the way they are handling their final season. They released four episodes the day before Thanksgiving, or was it on Thanksgiving? It was like right around then. They've got three more that are going to be released Christmas Day, and then one final episode that's going to be, I'm sure, like movie length on New Year's Eve. And I thought that's really smart because of how they broke up the binge watching, because now you can binge but also keep that final season going the entire holiday season. And as we were talking, I thought, I wonder if there's like a model or room for theaters to do those giant premieres like the first episode of like those, you know, those big shows that, you know, people have watch parties for. 'Cause I know people were having watch parties for Stranger Things, you know. I do wonder if maybe that could be sort of an interesting way for them to shift and accommodate the streaming watcher, and perhaps that moviegoer. I don't know. I don't know how that would work, but it's an interesting thought.
I think they need to adopt the college model and get cell phone baskets, like put them in there.
Oh yeah. Yes.
It, that, it, that's the equivalent of them showing Dirty Dancing, because like the other things that they do, they do corporate events at movie theaters. You can do birthday parties at movie theaters. COVID was a fantastic example of this. If you look at everything that movie theaters did to stay in business, and I think we lost like three out of the five movie theaters around here during COVID, but the ones that did stay in business did all these outside the box things to keep it happening. But they're not things that they can do on an ongoing basis. It's just
Yeah, that's true.
the property is just too expensive. It's just too big to not have bodies in those seats. You've got to fill it on a Friday and Saturday night during the daytime with some kind of big release on a regular basis, or those guys are going under.
I haven't seen this Stranger. I haven't seen Stranger Things this season yet. I
Me
just didn't have any
neither.
interest in seeing a bunch of 40-year-olds on bicycles with
Oh, I want to
bananas.
see it. I just have to finish another series, but I'll watch it over the holidays.
All right. Next up, Kindle to offer downloads for DRM-free titles. Beginning January 20th, 2026, new books published in the Amazon Kindle store without digital rights management, or DRM, will be available for readers to download in EPUB or PDF format per a company announcement. Previously published titles without DRM can also opt in to the feature, which Amazon said intends to make Kindle books available across a wider range of devices and applications. Existing titles with DRM must change their status to opt in to the program.
Isn't this something they had before and they took away?
Yes, and now it's back.
Now it's
So,
back.
yeah, I mean, there you can still have DRM in your books, but if you don't, then people can download it as a PDF. So, if you don't want your books downloaded as a PDF, you want the DRM, or if you do, then you don't.
I want people to download my books as an EPUB without DRM. That's what I want.
There you go.
And Amazon doesn't want that because they can, if they've got control over that EPUB, they can charge more money, et cetera, et cetera. Force you to stay on their platform, things like that. But no, it's annoying.
I'm just wondering. I mean, this was something they got rid of it. I don't even think it's been a year, right? Like it's we
No, it
talked
hasn't
about this
been that
fairly
long.
recently. Yeah, so I'm wondering if they got pushback on the fact that they got rid of it, or is this just some kind of revamped version of what they had before? I'm not sure what the. It just seems, odd for it to be coming back as quickly as it's coming back.
Yeah, they had made it more difficult. It was early this year because they didn't want users downloading and transferring titles to a USB.
Yeah, they want to make that walled garden.
Yeah.
I'm tired
Big
of walled
wall.
gardens.
I don't think we're getting rid of them, unfortunately.
Well, there are ways to do that, and I was actually just talking to somebody about that this weekend because there's this rise of physical media now, and I don't know how ebooks will factor into this, but there's bound to be a way. I was telling my wife that I was in Target, and I was literally standing and looking at the aisle of vinyl records, and these two teenage girls came up, jumped up on the actual racks so that they could thumb through all the albums like directly in front of me.
Oh
Didn't
my
notice I was
God.
standing there apparently, but they were excitedly talking about these albums and everything. And I just had this like epiphany that like, okay, these are two, like, they couldn't have been more than 16 years old, probably younger, and they were very excited about the albums they were finding. And these were modern, they were looking at modern albums, not like reprints of old stuff. So there's a resurgence of that for sure. Target also had these miniature vinyls that were like tiny little vinyls that would play on a full-size record player, which I thought was interesting. But I think the point of that is there's this new push. People are buying DVDs again, Blu-rays, buying things on vinyl, buying cassettes and CDs. I mean, and it's not about nostalgia. It's not a gimmick. A lot of people just want to own something again for their own consumption, so that they don't have to worry about Amazon or anyone else changing the rules and the whole thing going away, which has been happening more and more frequently.
Yeah.
All right. Last story. Social app reading report shows personal recommendations lead discovery. Social reading app Fable and digital subscription service Everand released their state of reading report, an analysis of reading trends based on a survey of more than 1,600 users. More than half of respondents report reading more this year than last. Fable also notes that personal recommendations have risen and are the dominant mode of discovery over finding their next read on ebook and audiobook platforms. Sometimes humans get it better than machines, Fable says in a release. Many readers say algorithms and search tools don't quite get their tastes. What some describe as a, quote, discovery crisis, they want recommendations that feel personal, not prescriptive. Though the most read books this year were Rebecca Yarrow's Empyrean, is that how you pronounce that?
Yes.
Empyrean series. The company expects romanticism to wane in the future since, quote, the category's long stretch of dominance has led to a crowded landscape. They also predict that publishers will expand their use of AI and audio.
This is, again, one of those seismic shifts. You know, like I do a lot of television commercials to promote books. You know, I've done print, I've done everything else. But traditional media and like the way that we've promoted products in general is just going away for this personalized, you know, model, which makes perfect sense because you can find, you know, an influencer or somebody who has, you know, tastes similar to yours. You can start following that individual and it's almost like they're speaking to you. They're cultivating those lists on your behalf. So this, you know, I would find a way to double down on it. I've got no clue how to do that though. Hopefully Megan can help us with that today.
Yeah, it's kind of what we were talking about last week too with Mark, and he's talking about those traditional TV things don't work. So you've got to be out there and get that organic discovery through word of mouth. So yeah.
You have a story. Share it with the world. Ingram Spark offers everything you need to publish, promote, sell, and print your book. Reach millions of readers worldwide with powerful tools created for independent authors. Get started for free at ingramspark.com/learn more.
Okay. Well, JD, who's up this week?
This week we've got Megan Minchiff coming on. Megan began her social media management agency, Social with Megan, after spending 20 years in marketing and communications for various tech firms and companies, banks and newspapers. Now she works with multiple brands, including Outliers Writing University, various authors, C-suite executives, skincare professionals, cloud companies, and many others. Get ready for a peek behind the social media curtain. Here she is, Megan Minchiff.
So Megan, welcome to the show.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
Yeah, I'm excited to have you. So your thing is helping people or companies build platforms like social media and those type of things. You do Social with Megan, you do Bone Chilling Books. I'm really excited to talk to you about all of that because I'm very bad with it. So
a lot of people are not that great with social media. And over the years, especially more so this past year, because I've been to in-person conferences with authors, I'm hearing it left and right. Like, I don't know what to post. I'm not confident. I'm an introvert. I don't know, you know, all that stuff. So I'm like, there's basically everything that you're doing is content. It doesn't matter. And then people are like, well, isn't it boring? I'm like, no, it's not. Like, everyone is interested in what you have to say and what it is that you're doing.
So sitting at home and reading with my cat and working out in my basement is content.
Yeah, honestly. Yeah, seriously. Because it's like, you know, you're doing, you could do a day in the life of, you could do, you know, break down, like take a picture of you with your cat. People love cats. People love animals, dogs. Those posts tend to do really well. but what I'm seeing a lot of lately, especially with authors, is the very vulnerable posts. So it's like, here's my journey of being an author. It's never been a great one. There's been ups and downs, but of course, social media, we see everyone's highlight reels. We don't see the nitty gritty. We don't see the details. We don't see the struggle of getting to publish a book. Yeah. And it's like, this is how many times I tried to, you know, reach out to an agent, an editor, this, that. And it's just, at the end of the day, it's just frustration. And then all of a sudden, you know, to us looking from the outside, looking in is like, oh, look how successful this author's been.
Yeah.
You know, and then so they take these authors who've been posting this stuff has been taking all their experiences and putting it into this carousel on Instagram, which is just like multiple pictures in one slide, one post. And they're saying, hey, it's not all rainbows and butterflies. I'm exposing exactly what it took for me to get from the thought of even me wanting to become a published author to actually becoming a published author. And people are loving that vulnerability, that rawness of, okay, thank you. And I see a lot of even just bookstagrammers, like readers, but also other authors being like, thank you so much for sharing your story. This is exactly how it was for me, or I find this so relatable, that type of stuff. So I think that that's awesome. I think that authors are really having a moment with that type of content right now.
Yeah, nice. So it is interesting, and I know, when I started a while ago, people were kind of in love with the overnight success. And I was talking to another author who I'm not going to name, and they're like, "Oh yeah, I'm an overnight success, but this is my seventh book." So yeah, I think it is nice to share that it's not all this sunshine and rainbows. So let's kind of start at the beginning. So if we have an author now who maybe has one book out or no books out or about to have a book come out, where would you suggest they start to have a meaningful kind of social media presence?
It all depends on what type of genre that you're writing. It also depends on your demographics of your audience. So, like, are you targeting the older crowd? Because if you are, then Facebook groups, Facebook page, that type of stuff would be really good for you. Yes, older crowds do hang out on Instagram. It is a good mix, I would say, of probably like early 20 somethings through even 65 on Instagram. I know, of course, of having Bone Chilling Books on Instagram, and I look at my insights all the time. It's way more female than male, number one. Number two, it's generally from like 35 to 65 year olds that are really consuming my content. So again, it just all depends on like the genre. If you are a YA author, if you are a fantasy, romanticy author, TikTok is probably going to be your best bet. Yes, Instagram, but TikTok, you will definitely do well there. Now, of course, it's not just, okay, I'm going to start posting and then I expect to go viral and, see all this growth and everything instantly. Unfortunately, that's not the case. Sometimes, yes, a post will just go completely viral, go nuts. Yes, that happens. But that's sort of like winning the lottery in that aspect. But you do have to play the game. You do have to be consistent. You do have to, have some sort of plan. You can't just kind of like, okay, I'm going to throw this post up, see what happens. And then like 3 weeks goes by. Post again. It doesn't work like that, unfortunately. A lot of people do think, oh, social media is luck, but it's not. There is a strategy
So
behind
it's
it.
consistency and slow growth, kind of is the key.
Yeah, and like when I work with my clients and they're like, "Well, I posted this week and I did everything you said and I'm still not seeing changes and growth and my reel hasn't gone viral." And it's like, "Okay, that's great, but I also tell my clients ahead of time, like, hey, when you're starting to work with me, this is very important to do. We need to look at your insights, your metrics every month from, and that's a thing, like a shelf life, especially for, say, Instagram. It has a longer shelf life nowadays versus like before it was like you post and then 24 hours, if that post sucks and didn't do well, it's not going to do well. That's it. Give up on it. Move on. Now it's like you post something and then 2 days, 3 days, weeks, months later, all of a sudden it's still blowing up. So that happens. It has a longer shelf life now. But people really need to just have that strategy in place, know that, okay, I'm going to post consistently, do everything, stick to the calendar for a solid 30 days, check in with my metrics, see how it performed. And then, if we need to make small tweaks along the way to improve, great. How does it look in another 30 days? In another 30 days. So, 30, 60, 90 day calendar is where I would like really hone in on all those metrics and see, okay, what has it been doing? Because when I do that with my clients and then they realize, oh, 30 days ago, my posts weren't doing that great. And then now, 30 days later, you're right. They are, even though, because they're looking in the day to day, they're like, well, it didn't do well. So it's like you got to give it time. you can't expect this success overnight. And that's the thing. I mean, to bringing up like my Bone Chilling Books Instagram again, I started that 5.5 years ago, and now I have almost 98,000 followers. It didn't just happen right away like that. You know, some people look at that number and they're like, "Oh my gosh, that's amazing!" And yes, it is amazing. Don't get me wrong, but it didn't just take a year. It didn't just take 30 days to happen.
So when you're talking about metrics, so we got to be consistent over time. What metrics actually matter for authors, and which ones should they maybe not pay so much attention to?
It depends. It depends on what your goals are.
Okay.
So, if your goal is to grow your account and get as many followers as possible, yes, of course, you want to look at the followers. If your goal is I want to just build a really engaged community, then you want to look at your engagement rate. You want to look at how many comments you're getting, how many people are sharing your posts, how many people are reposting it, how many people are saving it. So there's just different. It just all depends on what your actual goals are. Not only that, I do need to bring up the fact that the algorithm changes so many times. And I don't know if anyone out there knows, but there's actually multiple algorithms that all of the social media platforms has. It's not just one that they're looking at. There's multiple. If you are watching closely, the head of Instagram's always posting on his Instagram account, Adam Azari, and he's constantly talking about the different algorithms, plural, that Instagram has, and how to, you know, get the best reach, and you know, all this. So that's one thing that you definitely have to keep in mind. I know social media platforms don't just stay stagnant. They're like, okay, here's this algorithm, go have fun with it. It is constantly evolving. And that also affects how your reach, your post does, how the reach is for your post. It's not just about the content and like, oh, I suck at social media, I can't do this. There's so many different components that go into it. You know, my account was, you know, did really well for a while. All of a sudden it's like lots of shares, lots of views, everything. And then, oh, this week, this month, it has been, you know, not as many followers, not as many shares. And it just, you got to look at like, what is Instagram doing on the back end with their algorithms? How much is changing? What's being updated? You got to take that into effect. You got to take in holidays, back to school, the election, anything affects it. It's really crazy. So I think a lot of people don't realize that either. And they just think, well, my stuff sucks. No, not just your stuff that sucks.
So let's say your metric is engagement, and that's kind of what you're looking for. Is there anything you would suggest that an author can do to impact engagement?
Yeah, so I talked a little bit about that vulnerable type of post that people have been sharing, things like that, because then that sparks people to, I'm going to share this privately, like DM a friend and be like, hey, I know you've been struggling with this. Check out what this author went through. That's going to spark, oh my gosh, comments on the post itself. Thank you so much for sharing your story. This is great. I'm going to repost it so that I can revisit it later on and to remind myself, like, okay, this. I can be successful. People are going to share it because they feel inspired to their stories. So stuff like that, things that will spark a conversation, make people feel relatable. Other little things that you can do too in your post is like, you know, you have your post up, your pictures, and then in your caption, you can say your little story, and then at the end, have like a call to action, something where it's like you're asking your audience a question. How do you feel about this? Can you relate? That type of thing. And then again, it gets people to come back to your post. And then even if people are commenting, make sure you're always responding too, and give it a thoughtful comment, not just like a heart emoji or a clapping emoji. It's just like, oh, thank you so much for sharing your story. I'm glad that this, you know, sparked some inspiration or whatever the case is.
So being vulnerable, being human, and not having that perfect facade of social media. Nice. So one of the things I hear authors say is like, oh, it takes so much time. Like, I don't have time to do this. I have to write. How much time should it take? And how do you help authors stay consistent without feeling overwhelmed or burned out by doing social media?
Yeah, so going back to that strategy helps a lot. What I tell a lot of my clients, especially the author clients, because what do they want to do? They just want to write. They want to write their book. They want to promote their book. They want to sell their book. So at the end of the day, Strategy is so very important for this because also, I mean, social media is part of your business as an author. You need to nurture it, you need to do stuff with it. So I say, okay, I work with the author and I'm like, okay, what are your content pillars? My what? I don't know what that is. Okay, let's figure those out. You know, what are the key like 3 to 5? I say 3 is best, and then we can always cycle through those, rotate them. But what are your 3 top things that you really want to be talking to your audience about? Obviously, like, do you want to share personal, behind the scenes, your writing process, that type of stuff? You obviously want to promote, so that's another content pillar. Like, what's your third, what's your fourth, what's your fifth content pillar? And then, like I said, we'll rotate through those. Once we have those content pillars down, all right, now we're going to build out a content calendar. How many days a week can you commit to posting? Oh, 7 days. Well, let's not start that aggressive. Let's start with maybe 3 days. How does that feel? That's great. Okay, cool. So, 3 days a week, we'll do, say, Sunday, Tuesday, Thursday. But of course, taking into account, like, let's look at your metrics right now. How active is your audience right now? And so we look at those days. So if Sunday, Tuesday, Thursday doesn't really work for your audience right now, let's switch to the Monday, Wednesday, Friday that the metrics are telling us. So getting that down and then figuring out, okay, we've got these days that we're going to be posting. Now, which content pillars? Well, you want to make sure that you have a really good balance between all the content pillars. It's not just, I'm going to put this here, this here, this here, and then all of a sudden you have 3 posts in a row that are talking about promoting your books. You don't want that. So it's like, okay, well, we'll talk about my behind the scenes writing process, that type of thing on this day. And then on the next day will be a promotion post. And then on this day will be this. And again, it always comes down to your goals. Like, what is it that you want to be sharing with your audience? Why, how, that type of thing. So taking all that into consideration as well. And then, finally, it's like, okay, we've got all this, but like, what am I going to be doing as far as like creating the content, the caption writing, the actual asset, the graphic, the reel? Are you going to do a video? What does that look like? And it's like, okay, well, what are you comfortable with doing? You know, can you take photos? Can you take videos? What content do you have? Remember, everything is content. Even if it's of just a selfie, you've got your laptop in the background. And you're taking a picture and your dog's in the background. Okay, great. Now, what's that story behind that photo? What message do you want to convey to your audience? And then, when you figure all that out, what I love to suggest is do like batch content. You know, pick a day out of the week that might be a slower day for you. So, say it's like Friday mornings from 6 to 9 are your quiet days. Okay, great. Carve out an hour or two there to then create that content, get it all scheduled into a scheduling tool or Instagram, TikTok, they all have that. Get it all scheduled, ready to go so that you have 1, 2 weeks worth of content done. And then any other content that you're doing past that is then going to be for the future weeks. So you're way ahead of the curve at that point. And then all of a sudden you're like, oh, now I have all this time back for writing. And I'm not stressed out about what the heck I'm going to post. I have an idea, I have a plan, and then you just stick to it that way.
So maybe an hour a week. That's it. That's all you have to do. Nice. That seems doable, right? I think for anyone. So if you're really busy, like you said, like authors get busy during seasons like holidays, then would you just like batch content a week before, or how would you tackle that?
Yeah, I would. I mean, so also, you know, if you're like, you know what, I am just burnt out. I want to completely unplug from social media. I want to just pay attention to my family, do this, do that. That's totally fine. And honestly, like, I don't think anyone really expects you to be on posting all the time, 24/7. Like, it's not realistic. And so we want to make it so it's sustainable and you can maintain that. So then what I would say is, hey, just let people know. Be honest with your audience. Hey, I am going to take a couple weeks off because I'm going to be in my den writing. I'm going to be focusing on my family for these days of you know, the holidays. Great. People are going to applaud that. They're going to be like, all right, I understand. I respect that, you know? So I would voice it to your audience, let them know. But yes, if you are the type of person that's like, no, I need to post, that's fine. Just, yeah, plan ahead, batch your content.
Yeah, I like that. So just let your audience know what's going on. Again, that transparency and honesty and all of that. Is there anything you think that authors should stop doing?
It depends, because like if you're trying to reach out to bookstagrammers, readers, people to review your book and everything, there's a good way to go about it, and that is if on the bookstagram or the reader's profile, if they have an email to reach out to them, or obviously if their messages, their DMs are open, yes, send them a message that way. And but like say, hey, my name is so and so. I just wrote this book. Here's what it's about. I really appreciate your content. I've been following you for a while. Make sure that you're following them when you say that. And then just say, you know, I know that you are really into thrillers and this book is psychological thriller. Here's what it's about. I would love to send you a copy. What format would you like it in? I've got audiobook, obviously, if you have that. I've got an ebook and I also have a physical. Can I send you a copy? And then hopefully the person sees it and responds, and there you go. What I would not do though is go into people's comments and say the person wrote, hey, or posted something about, hey, here's my favorite book. And then all of a sudden in the comments, we're talking about this favorite book, but then some random author comes along and is like, hey, you should check out my book. And it's, you know, very promote, I don't know. For me, it is kind of a turnoff. I'd rather you either email me or DM me privately instead of just being on my comments about that. Because then I'm like, okay, great. I know you want to promote your book and I love that, but there's just a better place to do it. So,
I agree. I don't like that either when that happens. So you talk a little bit about repurposing content. Does that work? Like they have those services like repurpose.io and that will post content to multiple platforms. Is that something you would recommend?
So, are you saying like a post that's already been up and then you repost it?
So
Or are
like
you
let's say you make
saying,
a TikTok and then it
yeah.
posts it to Facebook and Instagram and Blue Sky and
Got
wherever
it.
else.
Yep. Okay. Because there's two different ways, but I do want to hit on the one that I was talking about
Oh, good.
after.
I want to hear
So,
about both for sure.
yeah. So, the one that you're talking about, yes, if you have a piece of content, you should 1 million percent be able to create millions of other pieces of content, not millions, but you know what I mean? Several pieces of content for other platforms. Do not overexert yourself and be like, well, I need to redo this specifically for TikTok. No, you don't. No. Just make sure that you create the video and make sure when you download it or to go share it to other platforms that it doesn't have like the Instagram watermark or the TikTok watermark or the CapCut watermark or the whatever watermark. Just make sure that that's gone and that it looks like it's just a raw original video specific for that platform. Because then that tells the algorithm, oh, cool, they're uploading something new, unique, fresh, and I'm going to share it out to their audience or, you know, help them with
Okay.
the algorithm.
So, yeah, I was just always curious, like, does it matter which one you make it for first? But
No.
make sure you get one of those services that takes out the watermark.
And not only that, when we're talking about content, when you are, for instance, this podcast right here, there's so many different pieces of content that can come out of just that one podcast. If you put it up on YouTube, great, it's there, it's the full length. You can also create multiple moments, key moments, whatever they're called, highlights from this one podcast that can then generate multiple pieces of content that you can use on TikTok, that you can use on Blue Sky, on Threads, on Instagram, wherever. And not only that, it doesn't have to be in video format. It can be in carousel format. It can be in just a static image. So there's just multiple pieces of content, you know, and it could be like, oh, the guest said a profound statement. So I'm going to take her headshot. Add a little bit of the her quote from there and then post it. So that's another piece of content. Like think of that too when you are creating stuff that, oh my gosh, there's just multiple things that can come from this one particular piece of content.
Nice. Okay. Did we hit on the other thing that you wanted to talk about?
So repurposing content, what I thought you meant was when you create a piece of content, you look back and you're like, holy cow, that did really well. And you want to obviously try to mimic that type of content moving forward. So hopefully that, you know, the algorithm will pick it back up, show it to your audience will be like, this is great. Your metrics will go up again for that one piece of content. Well, you can also do that. And basically, if the photo is still relevant, if the video is still relevant, just give it a new caption, just give it a new text overlay on the actual photo itself or the video. And then all of a sudden you have a new piece of content without it being a new piece of content.
Yeah, I see that all the time. Now that you said that, it just kind of light bulbed for me that I watch so many cat influencers and they'll post the same cute video.
Yeah.
With like new music, new caption. I'm like, oh yeah, I remember that. That was cool.
Yeah.
So authors can do that too.
Oh yeah. Anyone.
Yeah.
You should do that. 100%.
Take your best post, repurpose it. I love that.
That's why it's so important to always look at your metrics. And I feel like a lot of people do not look at their metrics. They're like, oh, whatever. No, you should. And I'm not just saying like every day, you know, or look at that week. It's look at the bigger picture, the month. How did your month do? And actually, Instagram's really good at this. They started this, I want to say, back in August. Especially if you have like a professional dashboard. So you go on and you look at your metrics and it'll give you a month wrap up. How did your month do compared to last month? So that's really awesome to look at too. And like, what was your best piece of content?
Yeah. Yeah. I have no idea about any of my metrics. So that's something I'm going to learn after this podcast, like metrics. Oh, okay.
Yep.
Wow. Well, that's great. So just as we're wrapping up here, anything we didn't cover, any advice that you might give to an author who's starting fresh in the new year, what do you think they should be doing?
Yeah, I mean, if you have a little bit of downtime right now and say you're fed up with social media, you just are at a loss, don't know what to do, any of that, create yourself a plan. And really, like I said, focus on those content pillars. Focus on when you can get this content out and then focus on batching that content. I think that'll help save you a lot of time, a lot of frustration moving forward. And then, I mean, if you need help, you can always reach out to me and just, you know, throw ideas out there. Help me. I'll help you brainstorm. But at the end of the day, I don't want it to be I can't do this. I don't want to do this. I'm just so frustrated. Like, I don't want that to happen for people. It should be fun, you know, and it shouldn't be forced either. It's just all stuff that's happening right now in your life, your work in progress, your future book coming up. Like, don't overthink it. Just put a plan together, start posting, be consistent, engage with your community to help build that audience. And I really think over time, you're going to see, oh, okay, it isn't that bad. And my audience is growing. And you want it to go a little bit slower. Because then if it's fast growth and you get this audience that's not engaged versus like you're slowly growing your community who is engaged. That's why I actually prefer Instagram over TikTok, because the community on Instagram is way more engaged than TikTok. TikTok's good for like virality, really, or, you know, just kind of like a quick, fast post just to get some eyes on something, you know, good for a promotional type of tool, entertainment. And then Instagram's like where you can kind of more tell your story and just be a little bit more authentic and genuine and more thought out with your posts.
That's great. That's great advice.
Yeah.
Thank you so much.
You're welcome. Thank you.
Okay. So Megan talks about not being perfect on social media, not putting up that, you know, perfect life facade and being vulnerable. I don't know about you, but I find that hard sometimes. Why is that hard?
Well, for me, it's hard because my life is that perfect. So it's hard for me to portray anything otherwise.
Okay, Kevin.
You know, she's right, you know, but like, yeah, it's tough to put those kind of things out there. You know, like any kind of personal message that I've ever put up gets a ridiculous amounts of views and likes and comments and all those things as compared to just the regular message. But it, you know, it's typically something I don't want to talk about. And I think, you know, for the most part, you know, authors are introverts, yeah, you know, we're used to that. And like, this is asking us to be the exact opposite of that. And you know, I don't know an easy way to do it. I don't know that I ever want to do it.
I have to say though, I mean, I've always been a very warts and all kind of guy. I talk about practically everything that's going on in my life on social media and elsewhere. I am a little guarded about like certain things. Like I'm not sharing details I think could be necessarily leveraged or used against me, like my home address, you know, or things like
don't
that.
Share that. No,
but, I'll share other people's home addresses. But I don't like what I try to avoid is doing a woe is me kind of post. You know, so I will tell people, you know, I'm having a rough time right now, or I'm going through something right now. But I try to find some positive spin on it. And that's not like a tactic or something. That's just how I operate. But I have found that what I get a lot of is people commenting, saying that, you know, when they watch my stuff or listen to my stuff, it feels authentic. It feels relatable. And so I do know that if you can find ways to sort of share that inner story, being personable, as I call it, it does get a response from people, and that can be very beneficial.
I always like it when people are always like, "You look so together," and I'm like, "Yes, you should see the hot mess on the inside." Thank you for that, though.
Yeah,
I mean, you're only seeing me from like the boobs up right now.
Well, if you think about when reality TV first hit, you know, like it was huge. And I think it was for that exact same reason, right? It was giving us a peek behind that little bit of a curtain into something that wasn't quite as perfect as we thought it was. And we got to see the vulnerable side of people, you know, cause the cameras didn't turn off where they normally would for a sitcom or a drama or whatever we were used to watching. And that really took off. And I think it's that human element, I think, that we gravitate towards. It's basically something personable versus a commercial, which is essentially what, you know, everything else is.
The most important thing, like, I do agree that people like the personal and the vulnerable, but, you know, I still think it's very important that you kind of decide like what you're willing to talk about. You know, like, you kind of have to set firm boundaries, particularly if you're going to have any kind of public life. And I think that, you know, like, you definitely don't want to set the expectation, because I've seen this happen even with authors, where they start off and they're very open, you know, about their lives, and they gain a following and they gain in popularity, and suddenly, you know, their followers sort of like think that they have a right to access them. And, you know, that can get very toxic very fast. They can turn on you. They can do all kinds of things. So I do think that, like, it is something to think about and navigate carefully. You know, if you don't want to talk about it, like, sometimes it's like, do you not want to talk about it because you want to protect that piece of you, or do you not want to talk about it because it's uncomfortable? Those, I think, are two different things. But I think it's like worth, because I think that a lot of the advice of like, be vulnerable and, you know, show them your real life, can also get like dark fast.
Yeah,
I think you need to. Everyone always talks about the cocktail party approach to social media. But they usually talk about it in terms of like, don't go marketing to people all the time, right? Like, you know, if you were at a cocktail party, you wouldn't walk up to somebody and say, "Hey, have you read my book?"
Yeah.
But the same sort of rule can apply to just what you share. Cause like, if you were at a party, let's say you pretty much knew everybody, like maybe this is a bunch of coworkers or even family members, but you don't see them all the time. You would share certain personal details because people would be interested in you as a person. You wouldn't just, you know, unload every single facet of what's going on in your life. And you might talk about, you know, "Well, hey, I've got this, I injured my shoulder," or what. You might talk about a few health issues or something, but you wouldn't give them like a full medical breakdown, you know. Usually, you know, maybe once in a while, you might, like, if they're showing interest, they show their care, you might give more details. But I think if you kind of use that approach, like, what would you say if you were standing in front of a whole bunch of these people, you know, who sort of know you? What sorts of things would you share?
Yeah, fair.
Well, that's kind of where the real rub is, because, you know, like, I'm a public person because I'm an author. I'm selling books. Like, that is what I want to be known for. And like, I don't necessarily want people buying books because of something that's going on in my personal life or something that I talk about, you know, whether it's good, bad, or, you know, indifferent. It doesn't really matter. Like, that shouldn't be the catalyst for people running into the bookstore and buying one of my titles. The books themselves should be the catalyst. And I guess that's where I really struggle with it.
Yeah, I know. I've heard it said that you do those other posts kind of to maintain engagement, not to sell books.
Yeah.
And Megan talks about having content pillars. So you're talking about your books, and what other two things do you want to be having out there? So that's something I've been thinking about, but you know, it's tough. It's like, well, what do I consistently want to be talking about other than Here's my cool book. I don't know.
I've been doing this
Wow.
thing lately, and it's really, I'm seeing my personal YouTube channel is growing because I do this daily, I call it the walking Kev, and it's just me talking to the camera while I'm out for a walk or whatever. But what I have started doing is I'm talking about whatever's on my mind, and then I've started relating things back to how that impacts me as a writer and how it impacts my stories or whatever. And so it's not necessarily a pitch to go buy my books, but it reminds them that this is what I'm about. And so because I can focus through that lens, it makes it a little easier to share certain personal details. Like I've talked all about this downsizing and move stuff because it's impacting my writing, it's impacting my storytelling. But I'm telling them how it does that, not just, oh man, we're downsizing, I'm stressed out or whatever. I'm saying, look, this has made it harder for me to write, but here's some ways I'm getting past that. And now it becomes something relatable.
You are clearly better at this than I am.
I don't know. It's not like I'm making any money from it yet, so maybe I'm not so great at it.
Well, I've been thinking more about it because I do want to do more social media. I know that's getting more important for authors. So I like that idea of batch recording an hour a week. That seems more manageable. Those of you that do social media, like how often do you do it and when?
Well, that honestly, that's another thing that really jumped out at me in what she was talking about. I mean, like she started going into metrics, and you've got to look at this, and you've got to look at that. And what it reminded me of is my wife. My wife is very like big into longevity right now, and like she knows every detail about every peptide, every this, every that. And like I don't want that knowledge in my head. Like I like being able to turn to my wife and say, "Hey, what should I take for this?" And like, and she knows all the like I don't want to understand the reasons behind it, any of that kind of stuff. And when I hear somebody like Megan, it's fantastic that she has this knowledge base. I don't want that knowledge base. But I would love to hire somebody like Megan because she has that knowledge base. So that's kind of where my head's at.
Do you batch record, Kevin, or do you do stuff like all the time through the week? You're probably most active on social media
Yeah,
of all of
I
us.
just kind of continuously produce content. I maybe it would be better if I batch recorded. I have been thinking about taking like every week I record, 45 minutes to an hour of certain things that are just straight up production. But I have been thinking about like how are some ways I might be able to kind of splice that up and share that as short content, because I'm seeing on my personal YouTube channel the shorts that I'm posting every day are having huge impact. I'm watching the audience grow, I'm watching engagement grow. So I know that works, but doing that across the board is very time consuming. So I'm just kind of looking for ways to kind of automate that. But maybe I should batch.
When I was doing Instagram, batching is what worked. Now that was before Reels took over. I think Reels is probably what derailed me and kind of stopped me from doing this because it was a lot easier when it was just photos. So you take your photos, you edit them, and then it's like, pre-write your captions. So you spend, a couple hours like on Sunday afternoon, when you're just like laying around, not doing anything. And then throughout the week, like, you wake up or, whatever time you have, and it's you already have the caption and the picture, you just post it and it's done. And that was the easiest way to maintain consistency. Reels and videos, even, 5, 10 second ones can sometimes be more difficult. Like I said, that's kind of why I fell off for a while, but I think I'm just going to go back to Instagram and just do photos. And I mean, algorithm be damned. I did like and agree with what she said about Instagram being more engaged than TikTok. I still find that even though I'm not posting a lot, like I do interact with stories and DMs, and Instagram is still like very much like it feels more social. TikTok feels like people are just like talking at you, but Instagram feels more like intimate in a way, which is weird because it's social media,
I
but
know. I agree with that. That's my preferred social media too. So, Okay. With that, JD, who is up next week?
Next week, we've got Jenna Blum coming on. Jenna's a New York Times and number one international bestselling author of Those Who Save Us, The Storm Chasers, and The Lost Family. She's back with her latest novel, Murder Your Darlings. It's a spicy romantic suspense novel due out in January. Jenna Blum.
Ooh, sounds great. If you'd like to be notified as soon as new episodes publish, make sure you go to writersincpodcast.com and sign up now. We'll see you next episode and have a great week of writing.
Thanks for listening to this episode of Writers Inc. Access the show notes and leave a comment at writersincpodcast.com.